Welcome to our class on Chassidus. We're going to be learning a beautiful Chassidic discourse from the Rebbe. The name of the Chassidic discourse is called Gadol Yeh. The Rebbe said, this Chassidic discourse on Shabbos, Parshas, Matos, and Maasei, that year was the Shabbos that blessed the month of Menachem Av in the year Tav Shin Chav Bei, 63 years ago. The Rebbe went on to certify and edit this Chassidic discourse in honor of Shabbos, Parshas, Menachem Av in the year Tav Shin Nun, 35 years ago. So again, the verse is based on a verse in the prophet that says, Gadol Yeh Kavod HaBayis Hazeh. Greater is going to be the honor of this house, HaAchrein, the last one, Min HaRishon, from the first one. So the Rebbe says there's two different insights. One translation is, what is the last one referring to? It's referring to the second temple. That the second temple is going to be greater than the first one, both in the size of the building and also in the amount of years that it stood. That's one insight, simple insight. The Zohar comes along and says that because it says Achrein, it doesn't mean the second one, it actually means the last one. It's referring to the third temple, which is going to be built, God willing, very, very soon, and it's going to be greater than the first and the second. What, so you can say, what do you mean? Why is it called the last one? Because both the first and the second are considered beforehand the first, because the fact is both of them didn't last. However, when it comes to the third base of Mikdash, it's going to last forever. That's what the Zohar says. That's why what Chazal tell us, that not like Avram Avinu that said it was called a higher mountain. And not like Yitzchak that said it was called a field, but Yaakov called it a house. In other words, because the first temple it corresponds to Abraham, and the second temple it corresponds to Yitzchak, and the third one corresponds to Yaakov. And the author explains in the Likutei Torah that the connection between the third temple and Yaakov, because we know Yaakov is truth, and truth is something that doesn't stop and lasts forever. Now, even though in that teaching of Chazal, where it says, not like Avram Avinu that called it a mountain, and Yitzchak called it a field, and Yaakov called it a house, what is it referring to? It's referring to the Beit HaMikdash, the temple. But the fact is, the expression in Likutei Torah from the Alter Rebbe is, he says three different redemptions, three different geulot. In other words, the first redemption is in the merit of Avram Avinu. The second redemption is in the merit of Yitzchak. And the third redemption is in the merit of Yaakov. And he explains over there that the third redemption, that's an everlasting redemption. What does that mean, literally? Because what is a redemption? What is the main part of redemption? Building the Beis HaMikdash. And because there's an upgrade in the Beis HaMikdash, which means the Beis HaMikdash is going to last forever, so therefore the redemption is a whole different level. And that's why he connects it in Likutei Torah, the quality of the third redemption with the quality of the third Beit HaMikdash. There was, he liked to add that the reason why in Likutei Torah from the Alter Rebbe, he speaks about of the quality of the third redemption, because the fact is that the third redemption is higher than the quality of the third Beit HaMikdash. And as we see, that the redemption, which means the gathering of all the people that are in exile, when is that going to happen? It's going to happen after the Beit HaMikdash. First, we're going to build the Beit HaMikdash, and then everyone's going to come streaming to Jerusalem. Now, but the fact is, so even though it comes afterwards, but this quality of the redemption comes because of the building of the third Beit HaMikdash. And like we see in the Likutei Torah, it's learned from it, it's learned from the quality of the third Beis HaMikdash. Why? Because the building of the third Beis HaMikdash is going to have within it all the qualities that exist, including that it's going to bring about the ultimate redemption, that everyone's going to be brought back to Jerusalem. And like it says in the Zohar, in the order of the flow, the way it's going to be, in the future when Mashiach comes, so you're going to have the Beis HaMikdash being built, you're going to have the gathering of the exiles, and you're going to have after at the end, the last thing is going to be the resurrection of the dead. So you can say that the revealed part of the power of the third Beis HaMikdash, which we said it's going to last forever. Where is that going to play out? So the first thing we just learned till now is going to be in the redemption part. But where is it going to be? And where is it going to be like the home run? Where is it going to be the finishing touch? Is when we're going to have Tchias HaMeisim, the dead are going to be resurrected, and then we're going to have everlasting life. And ever since he liked the connect to what it says in the verse, Yechayenu miyoymayim b'yoyim hashlishi, which means we're going to live 2 days, and the third day we're going to be standing upright, and we're going to really live. In other words, so what does it mean the third day? So on one hand, it means what it's referring to the third Beit HaMikdash, and this other opinion is going on actually the resurrection of the dead. And what's the connection? Because when you're going to have the resurrection of the dead, that's going to reveal the real power of the Beit HaMikdash. Just as we're going to understand this based on what Chazal tell us, what it says as follows. Ola Aryeh, the lion stood up, the mazel Aryeh, in the mazel of Aryeh, of the mazel of lion, and the hichavis Ariel, and he destroyed Ariel. What? And the Medrash continues, that happened in order, sheyavei Aryeh, the mazel Aryeh, even Ariel, that lion again should stand up in the same mazel of Aryeh, and should build Ariel. So what do we see from here? It is that we're saying that the great big honor of the last house is going to be more than the first one applies even if the first Beit HaMikdash wasn't destroyed. And even if the first Beit HaMikdash had an everlasting, it lasted forever. But nevertheless, the lion stood up and he destroyed it so that the lion can stand up and rebuild it. Because then you're going to have something which is going to be even greater, even if the first Beis HaMikdash lasted forever. Well, how is that? If the first one's lasting forever, how do you have a superiority in the third one? So he gives like the example of a Baal Teshuva, someone that returns, versus a tzaddik, a righteous person. Why? Because the service of a righteous person, even a tzaddik that doesn't have an evil inclination, and if it's not possible to sin, and basically their service is everlasting, there's no sin there. But the fact is, it only reaches in the level of Ishtalshlus. It reaches certain levels, a high level, a higher level, but it's a level. However, when someone does tshuva, when someone returns to Hashem, you have the power to reach, we call lemailam Ishtalshlus. You can go off the charts. And that's why it says that the lion stood up and destroyed in order that the lion should come and rebuild. And we know that, what does it mean that the lion is coming? It's referring to Hashem. Like it says in the prophets, Aryeh Shag Mi Laira. If when the lion Hashem is coming, who's not in awe? And what does that mean? That means practically that's the revelation of the level of Keter above Ishtalshlus. And everything he'd like to add that even according to what Chazal tell us, that when the that when we came up from exile, you could have had already the building of the third temple, but nevertheless, we could have had already then. But the fact is, the third temple, which is going to be like in the future, Mashiach comes after a second temple, is going to be what, much greater. Why? Even though when we return from Babylonian exile after the destruction of the first temple and the fixing of it, etc., we return. So obviously we're a level of Baal Teshuva, we return to Hashem. But the fact is, when it comes to Teshuva, there's different levels. And therefore, because there's different levels, therefore we had unfortunately destruction of the first temple, and then we had the second temple and destruction of the second temple. So that, and it's all for one reason, that when we work hard in exile, after the destruction of the second temple, we're going to reach the ultimate. We have the power today to reach the ultimate in returning to Hashem. And because of that, we're going to have that this building of the third temple is going to be much greater on all levels. So based on this, he'd like to explain what Chazal tell us, that based on the verse, it says, Shimu Dvar Hashem, listen to the word of Hashem, Beis Yaakov, the house of Jacob, and his Shimu Divrei Torah, listen to the words of Torah, Ad shalai tishmu, until you're not going to hear the words of the prophets. And then says, listen to the words of the prophets until you don't hear the words of rebuke. And he finishes off and says, listen, bodies, until you have to hear the bones. And like he finishes off and he says, the dried bones, listen to Hashem. So he explains, one second. This that he says, listen to the words of the Torah, so you want to listen to the prophets, you can say very simple. Because what's the whole idea of the prophets? The prophets is telling you to listen to the Torah. So if you listen to the Torah, you don't need the prophets. Notice, if you listen, what do you need the prophets for? And the same thing also, if you listen to the prophets, what the prophets told us, because the fact is the first prophets, they came to command us to listen to the Torah. So you wouldn't have to have the rebuke afterwards. And the same thing also, what it continues on to say, the different levels. But this is what he says, that listen to your body, so you won't have to have the bones. What do you mean? What does that mean? The fact is, even if we listen to the Torah, and even if we listen to the rebuke, we wouldn't merit for the God forbid for the great resurrection of the dead. We do want to listen. We want the dead to be resurrected. So obviously, you can say, what does it mean that when we went down to the level that we didn't listen to the words of Torah? So then, what happens is we're going to have the resurrection of the dead on a much greater level, just like the building of the third temple, which comes after the destruction. So then, the tshuva is in a whole different level. Nadab was going to explain the quality of the third temple over the first and the second. And even compared to the first one, like that matter of fact, even compared to the second one, that would have been on the same level as the third temple. He says, we'll understand this based, first we have to understand the whole idea of the Beit Hamikdash, of the temple. Also, the quality, so the Beit HaMikdash is referring to the base of the Mikdash itself, the building of the base of the Mikdash, but also the Mokam HaMikdash, the place of the Mikdash. Because we know that the place of the Mikdash, even before the Beit HaMikdash was built, is much higher, the place itself, than any place in the world. Like it says in Torah, Manoira HaMokam HaZeh, how awesome is this place? Ein Zeh Ki'im Beis Elokim. It was just a space. And he said it's a house of God. And the Targum, Unkelus, translate, less than a sar hegid. It's not a simple place. This is a very, very, the place itself is holy. In other words, the whole world is called a tar hegid. It's a place of a regular person. Why? Because how is the whole world created? The whole world was created with the 10 utterances, which the utterances are called milin diyoyta, simple words. However, the place of the Mikdash is not simple words. In other words, even though when you're going to say, well, the fact is the Beit HaMikdash, the place was built with the 10 utterances, and matter of fact, the beginning of the building was the place where the Eben Shasiya, which is in the place of the Mikdash, and from there it went to the whole world. The fact is, he says, yes, it's true, but the fact is, from the 10 utterances, it says, well, by Yirmer Elokim, Elokim, the name of Hashem Elokim. However, in the place of the Mikdash, over there, what happened was we had the revelation of Yud Kei Vav Kei, like he says, Ochein Yesh Havaya B'makam Hazeh. So the whole world was created as a Elokim, which is judgment and more limited. However, in the place of the Mikdash, it says Yud Kei Vav Kei was revealed there. Just 1 second. We have to understand. The fact is, the quality of the place of the Mikdash over any space in the whole world is referred in a revealed way is the fact that you had the Beit Hamikdash there, not the space itself. Because the fact is, like we said, the place of the Mikdash was created with the 10 utterances, like he calls it Milin Dihidyoita, and it says specifically that the place is not a place of simple things. What does that mean? There explains as follows. That based on what it says, the author explains in Tanya, that actually the creation of the world comes from Yud Kei Vav Kei. And as we know, Yud Kei Vav Kei comes from an expression of Havaya, Lashon Mahava, of creation. But if the world was created strictly and exclusively from the Shem Yud Kei Vav Kei, the world would totally become nullified. So because the Yud Kei Vav Kei was so powerful, and if the Yud Kei Vav Kei would have directly created the world wouldn't exist. So in actuality, the world was created through the name Elohim. However, the place of the Mikdash was in a way that the name Elohim, which minimizes the power of Yud Kei Vav Kei in the world, doesn't conceal on the Yud Kei Vav Kei. And that's why it says, less than a sar hegid, because in the place of the Mikdash, what was felt in a revealed way, the creation, the way it was, from Yud Kei Vav Kei. So the Rebbe is saying this, yes, the world is created through Yud Kei Vav Kei, but the fact is the whole world goes through the filter of Elohim, and that's why you don't feel Yud Kei Vav Kei. However, in the place of the Mikdash, what you feel is the Yud Kei Vav Kei. And Rebbe explains. The idea is as follows. The creation that took place in the whole world from the name Elohim is a way where it's in Kabbalah, it's called Hislapshus. And because it's a diluted energy, it's able to get involved and enclose itself in the world. Like the verse says, Bereishis bara Elokim. So when Hashem created the world, he used Elokim, and therefore the Elokim got involved in the world. However, the creation from Yudke Vavke is something which is called not Bederech Islamshus, where it gets involved in clothed, but Bederech Mela happens automatically. Yudke Vavke, so this creation happens automatically. Like the verse says, Yahalu Hashem Hashem, Ki Yutzivi, command of an Evro, would happen by itself. Now, so then the difference between creation, in other words, if creation is Yutke Vavke and happens automatic, or if it's Elohim and it gets involved, it reflects on the relationship from the thing that's created to the thing that created it. In other words, what does that mean practically? When the thing that's created is close to the thing that's creating it, so then what happens is it's automatic. So when you have the Yud Kei Vav Kei that creates, so it happens automatic. And he gives an example. The example he gives, there's two examples he gives in Kabbalah. One is called Ilav Olol, cause and effect. In other words, cause and effect means that the effect has some kind of relationship with the cause. So therefore, when something is created, cause and effect, it happens automatically. Like, for example, you have intellect and you have emotions. So emotions, that's a byproduct of intellect, the emotions has a relationship with the intellect. So when you meditate how great God is, automatically you love him. Because love and intellect are related. That's one analogy. So the first analogy they give is ilav olol, cause and effect. So when you use your intellect and you meditate on something, the emotion comes. Another analogy he gives, and the analogy to show about when God created the world, Yudke Vavke, where it comes automatic. And the other analogy is light and the source of light, or the ray and the light. So in other words, what happens like this. When you have the source of light, so the light that comes out reveals what's in the source. So therefore, the light, the source of light doesn't have to create the light, it comes automatic. So that is the two analogies of Yudke Vavke, where it happens automatic. The first analogy is Ilav Olol, cause and effect, and the second one is Uramar. However, when the thing that's created has no relationship with the creator, so then you have to go create it. The thing that's creating is busy. I'm creating the thing that needs to be created because there's no automatic relationship. Now the reason, because when something is created automatic, so what is the main point? The source is the main thing, and the byproduct is automatic. Like the intellect is the main thing, and the emotion comes automatic. Ilav olol, or the main thing is the source. Light comes automatic. So therefore, even though when you're dealing with cause and effect, and it comes automatic, so the thing that's a cause, it doesn't reveal its source, but it has its own independent existence. But even though the emotion is its own emotion, but you see that the emotion came from the intellect that meditated on it. And like the example, intellect and emotions. That when the emotion, you feel that insight that you had. And that's why it's automatic. But in order to create something which is farther away from its source, so in order for that to happen, it has to be hislapsus. He has to get involved. What does that mean? What does it mean to get involved? Not only that the source gets revealed, but literally has to get involved to create something new. And therefore, when it goes involved and creates something new, it's its own independent existence. And what happens is it doesn't recognize its source. So, for example, what will be the example? So the example he gives is, I'll say the words in Hebrew, I'll translate it, koyach and toyel. So koyach is a force, and toyel is what comes out of the force. In other words, for the reason, what happens like this, when you have a force, and then a product comes out of the force, it doesn't happen by itself, it's not automatic, but the force has to put it into the thing that's happening. Why? Because what's happening is disconnected from its source. So let's say you have a ball, and you want to throw it. It doesn't go. You have to put in energy, a koyach, a power, and then it goes. And then guess what? It goes on its own. And why is that? Because the act that's happening, it's totally something new from its source. You have a force, it's sitting, nothing's happening. So you create a force, and the force pushes it to happen. So since that the force that's making it happen is spiritual, and the action is physical, it moved from point A to point B. So what happens is the action that comes from its force, it's a brand new activity. Almost like, not exactly, something from nothing. And the power and the energy that caused it to happen, so it's a new force. And once it's over, the force is gone. So what do you see from here? That when you do an act, that you know that it came from a force, so through the act, you know the source. But in the effect, you don't see that it came from the source. Once you threw something, you don't give a look. Oh, it came because of a source. You see, it has a dependent existence, not connected to its source. Why? Because the power that made it happen is spiritual, and the physical thing that moved was physical. So the spiritual energy is not revealed in the physical act. What caused that was spiritual. It moved. If something moves, something, you don't see it. And he'd like to add that this then in the action, what you don't feel is the power, not only because of the thing that happened, which you can't compare to the force, which that spiritualness, this is, but also from the force itself. Why is that? Because this that the energy that caused something to happen, it's two different worlds. This is energy and this is something physical. So therefore, to draw down the power to the physical thing that happened, it disappears. Because when you create something new which has no relationship to the thing that happened, the thing disappears. So after the energy did its job, it's gone. So therefore, the effect that happened, you don't see it afterwards. So anytime it's two different worlds, once you stop doing your job, the person, the activity does not recognize the source. So the same thing also, that's the analogy. The same thing also, practically, when God created the world from the name Elohim, which means he got involved in creating the world, and the Elohim obviously is spiritual, the world is physical, so the Elohim energy is not felt in the world. And therefore the world and the people and the human beings and the animals and everything that was created from the energy force of Elohim becomes an independent existence, and their humility and acceptance is only they can physically acknowledge it, but they don't totally disappear. They have their own identity. That's when you create from Hashem Elohim. However, when this creation from Yud Kei Vav Kei, which happens automatic, so then that energy is felt in what was created. And therefore the recognition in the thing that was created has the power to have total, we call in Kabbalah, bitul metzius, it doesn't exist. So in other words, to recap, when you have a creation from Shem Elohim, so basically it's disconnected, it's two different worlds, so once it creates it, the thing that was created doesn't recognize its source. Yeah, you can acknowledge it, hello, goodbye. But when this comes from Yud Kei Vav Kei, then it does recognize and you have the power to be told I'm nothing. It's all coming from Yud Kei Vav Kei. Now, we're going to go deeper into this. So it's known that in the world of Chassidut, when you bring two parables, or even more, is because obviously the parable doesn't match up exactly, and you have to bring two different ones, and each one brings out a different point. So you bring two parables, or maybe more, because each one brings out a specific fine point. And the same thing applies over here. The reason why we bring two parables to explain why when something is created automatic, so the thing that's created stays in close relationship with its source. So first we brought the analogy of cause and effect, Ilav Olav, and then we brought the analogy of light and the source of light, Eremar. Why is that? Because in the analogy we're trying to point out is that even when there's creation that happens automatically and you create something new, which obviously has no connection to its source, And like it's understood from when Hashem created the world with Yud Kei Vav Kei, so what is a Kihut Siva? He commanded and it and it came into being. In other words, when you say Bria, creation, that's Yesh Me'ayin, something from nothing. And when you say Yesh Me'ayin, this obviously can't compare. This is physical and that's infinite. That's nothing. Now, but nevertheless, this thing you create from Yud Kei Vav Kei in a way that the Yud Kei Vav Kei is still revealed in the thing that was created. What does that mean? That it recognizes, the thing that's created recognizes it doesn't have its own existence. And what is its own existence? That the godly energy that created me. And because I feel it, that's why I'm totally nullified and accepted to Hashem. But not that the actual energy is revealed in the thing that's created. Why? Since it was created, he can't compare it to the source of its creation. So therefore, that energy can't be revealed in a revealed way. Just like in a physical thing, the spiritual can't be revealed in a revealed way. And to add, when you're dealing with koyach and poyel, a force, and something that came from it, since koyach, which is a power, what's the purpose of the power? To do its job. And it gets involved. It pushes it physically. So this, that, the power creates something to happen. And what happens is, it doesn't stay revealed in it. However, when you're dealing with the creation of Yud Kei Vav Kei, and Yud Kei Vav Kei, it's happening automatic by itself. It's not like a force that has to push it. So obviously, it's much, much more greater than the creation. So it does. So therefore, it's not revealed because obviously it's totally much higher than it. So therefore, the first analogy of cause and effect really doesn't line up so well. Why? Because when you're dealing with cause and effect, the closeness of the effect to the cause, it does have a relationship, and the revelation of the cause isn't the thing that is in the effect. Like, for example, intellect and emotions. In the emotion, you see that there's some kind of connection with intellect. And let's take intellect and emotions. So you have the cause, which is intellect, and the effect is the emotions. So in the, if you analyze the emotion, you'll see, yes, it was a thought out emotion. Like, for example, let's say you all of a sudden you're inspired with tremendous love for something because you understand your intellect. Oh, that's a good thing. And so you see that you see the connection. So and that obviously doesn't apply with the creation of Yud Kei Vav Kei and the world, because the fact is you don't see it. But in order to explain that even when the creation is something which you can compare, but nevertheless it stays close, so you have to bring the second analogy of light, the source of light and light. Why? Because even when light is only a ray, which you can't compare to its source, because the fact is the source is not in the ray, in the light. And through the light, you only know that it exists, but you don't know what it is. But nevertheless, in the light, you feel it's close to its source, and you feel its source. And it actually is totally nullified to it. So in the first one, yes, it brings out one point. But the second point it doesn't bring out. But the fact is, he says, if that's the case, why don't we just bring the second one, the light and the source of light and the light? Because even in the analogy of the light and the source of light, it's not enough. Why? Because when you're dealing with the source of light and light, the closeness of the light to the source of light and its total acceptance of it, so the fact is, the light doesn't have its own existence. The only existence of light is because it reveals its source. It doesn't stand on its own two feet. However, an analogy we're trying to bring out is that even when Hashem creates the world from Yud Kei Vav Kei, Kitsu of an Ibro, so what does a creation mean? It's not just an expansion and revealing its source, but no, Hashem created a physical world. And like we see what it says in Tanya, that even if the world is created through Yud Kei Vav Kei, without the contraction of Elohim, the fact is, people will be created something from nothing. Yes, we'll be totally nullified, like the nullification of the ray of the sun to the sun. But in order to explain that something that exists is still close to its source, So you need to bring like an independent existence. You have to bring the analogy of cause and effect. That even though the effect is something, and it's not only a revelation, but nevertheless, it's close to its source. So each one brings something else out. Elab all brings out, you can be an independent existence, and you connect to the source. Oivre Moir brings out, you're much deeper connected. It's you recognize the source in a deeper way, but that wouldn't give you its independent existence. In other words, you can say that the reason why that they bring first the analogy of cause and effect before the light and the source of light, because the main revolutionary idea is that things that were created from Yud-Kei Vav-Kei are totally bottled, they're humbled, and they're connected they're connected to its source. It's to point out even that they're existing. There's something they exist, but nevertheless, what they recognize is the source of Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, and that specifically we get from Elab Olam, cause and effect. But in order to explain that the revelation of the source exists also in something which you can't compare it to. So if you have to bring the analogy of light and the source of light. So in other words, like this. In Elab Olol, what you're saying is that there is some kind of connection, but you're an independent existence. In Oyer Mor, you're saying is, no, how can you compare the two? Okay, now, it's known that this, that the world is defined and limited in both in space and in time. Why is that? How can you have space? This is here, that's there, it takes time to get point, and takes time to get from place to point A to point B, time and space. But it's because the creation was from Shem Elokim. Because if the world was created from Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, we wouldn't have time and space. And that's why in the Bet HaMikdash, it says, wow, Achin Yeshavai, God is here. Why? Because in the base of Mikdash, it was higher than space. As we know, the place of the ark didn't take up space. If you measured from the wall to the ark, and from the end of the ark to the wall, and then you measured from wall to wall, it was the same dimensions. So how did it take up space? Because obviously it wasn't limited to time and space. However, the revelation that shined in the base of Mikdash, what was it? Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. The way it went through Elohim. Because if you have Yud-Kei Vav-Kei without any mix of Hashem Elokim, that would be totally no space. But this, that you had the Holy of Holies, which basically was a place that was measured, as we know it was 20 Amot by 20 Amot. And we know that the Ark also had a measurement, a 2.5 by 1.5, etc. But nevertheless, didn't take up space. So that's called a union of Yud-Kei Vav-Kei and Elokim. On one hand, it didn't take up space. On one hand, it did take up space. We have to understand. Even when you're dealing with a creation that comes from Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, so you create something new, which obviously, and then you can't compare it to its source, and the revelation of Yud-Kei Vav-Kei in the world that was created from it is only in terms of what? Acceptance. In other words, we recognize that the existence is the Yud-Kei Vav-Kei that caused us to exist. So therefore, even in the world that's created from Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, there should have been a limitation of time and space without Shem Elokim. So Rebbe explains and he says as follows. You can say the explanation is, with an introduction, that this that we say, what does Havaya mean? Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. Hoya, Hoyve, V'yiyah Kechad. Past, present, and future, all as one. What is past, present, and future? That's time. So what do we see from here? That even the world that was created from Yud-Kei Vav-Kei has time. Okay, fine. The world that has time, past, present, future, it's all one. So it's time, but it's not confined to the time. The same thing also with space. The world that was created, Beis HaMikdash, from Yud-Kei Vav-Kei has space. But all the four sides on top of the monument is all one. So based on that, obviously you can say that the reason that the space and time of the world that was created from Yud-Kei Vav-Kei is not limited and it's not divided up, even though the world that's created from Yud-Kei Vav-Kei you can't compare to the source where it was created from. Why is that? That is because it has the element of bittul, acceptance. And since the whole idea of past and present and future and all the six dimensions, high, top and bottom and all the four sides, it's not its own existence, but it's the fact that Hashem created it, so therefore it doesn't contradict one another, and it's actually one. So Beis Hashem explains that it's explained many, many places that the place of the Holy of Holies actually comes from Shem Elokim. So even though we know it's above space, because the fact is the place of the Holy of Holies, which we said is 20 by 20 amot by 20 amot, so it has a space, but it was a place that was divided up. That means every amot was in a different area, and the division came from Shem Elokim. So the fact that you had space and a division, that came from Shem Elokim. But this component of the ark that we said didn't take this place, that's the union of Yud Kei Vav Kei and Shem Elokim. That means that the limitation and the vision of space and of the ark comes from Shem Elokim. And this, that there wasn't any measurement, that came from Yud Kei Vav Kei, which was revealed in a space of Elokim, which we said is the union of Yud Kei Vav Kei and Shem Elokim. It's called in Kabbalah Yichud Davar of Elokim. That's 1 second. We have to understand. This that from Shem Elokim creates the vision of space. This is here, that's there. Time, because time and space, the way it's created from Elokim, it's something, it's an existence. And you have past, and you have the present, and you have the future, and you have this space and that space. So who knows when it's felt in the six different dimensions of space and the past, present, and future of time, that godliness is the one that creates it, then it becomes one. So if that's the case, the question is, how is it possible that in the place of the ark, a place that has a division of space, which obviously it exists, how can you have in that space the revelation of Yud Kei Vav Kei, which is infinite? How do you create the two opposites? So there's the point in the explanation is like this. What is Elokim? Elokim basically creates a tzimtzum, contraction, and it creates a concealment. So Elokim's concealment and contraction of light is only for us human beings and the world itself, things that were created. But in reference to Yud Kei Vav Kei, there is no concealment. So therefore, even after Yud Kei Vav Kei encloses itself in the glove of Shem Elokim, and through Elokim the world becomes a something, but the world does not conceal the Yud Kei Vav Kei. And even in the physical existence that was created through Shem, from the name Elokim, and because of that, you have a division of space and time. What's revealed there is Yud Kei Vav Kei. And from Yud Kei Vav Kei's perspective, that the world, Yud Kei Vav Kei is creating it. And like he gives the famous analogy from a teacher and a student. So if you have a teacher, a brilliant teacher, and he has a student that's a basic student, and way off comprehension level. So in order for the teacher to teach the student, he can't come ahead and just shower him everything that he knows. He has to conceal a lot of his ideas. And the only thing he gives him over is a small idea, an external idea. And even the idea, he has to limit it, and he has to put it into garments, and he has to conceal it, and he has to give parables. So when he creates all these tzimtzumim and all these parables and all these concealment, that's only for the student. The teacher didn't lose anything, because the teacher still sees the wisdom the way it is. Even through the concealment, and even in the garments, and even in the in the parables. And to add, in the analogy of a teacher and a student, this that for the teacher, there's no concealment, what does that mean? After he went and created the whole concealment and he diluted a small teaching, so what he still sees is the internal intellect, even in the external and the garment that he created. That's by a teacher and a student. However, when it comes to Hashem, this that we're saying there was a contraction of light, it doesn't mean literally there was a contraction. Like in Kabbalah it's called, the tzimtzum is not kapshute literally. In other words, the tzimtzum doesn't conceal any of the infinite part of the light. And there's two components where it doesn't conceal. Point number one is that after the concealment and the contraction, The infinite light is shining in a revealed way in the place of the concealment, just like before. Wow. In the concealment, in the contraction, the infinite light is shining just like before. That's point number one. And also, even while we're going through the process of creating the contraction of light and the concealment does not hide anything. Let's explain to at length, this is the whole concept of symptoms, not kshuti, etc. So based on Shabbat says, now we'll understand more that even in the physical existence that is created through the concealment of the name Elohim, what is shining there in a revealed way? Yudke Vavke. Because the analogy of the student and the teacher, so when there's a contraction, so there's a concealment where the student doesn't see it, because even when the teacher is trying to conceal, so the teacher's creating a concealment within himself as well. And therefore, after the concealment, when the teacher sees the intellect in the garments and the parables, but it's not part of the garment itself. Because while he was going through the process, he had to conceal it. However, when it comes to Hashem, the concealment itself, the contraction itself, the symptom itself, there's no concealment. So therefore, the revelation of Yudke Vavke is literally exists in a revealed way in every part of the process. So based on this, we'll understand now what it says, Les Dein Asar Hedyet. In the Makayim HaMikdash, in the place of the Mikdash, there is no low-level light. Why? Because the place of the Mikdash, it's not a low-level light. And the same thing also, the place of the Ark, which we said doesn't have any measurements. Because the space has no limits. Why? Because the revelation of Yudke Vavke is full-blown, full capacity in the place of the Mikdash and the place of the Ark. Now the verse goes further. To explain the idea, the less Dein Asar Hedyek means there is no low-level light in the place of the Mikdash, the place of the Ark, more deeper. They will understand the base on the concept of the union of Yudke Vavke and Elohim. Or like it says, Havaya Elohim Kulachad, the Yudke Vavke and Elohim, it's all one. So generally speaking, there's two explanations to that. What does that mean? Explanation number one is that even the name Elohim, which Elohim is all about symptom, contraction. But the reality, no. Elohim is also, even though you look at it, it's contracting, but the essence and the purpose is and the vision is to reveal. And as in order that Yudke Vavke should be revealed in this physical world, yeah, you need to have the symptom, the contraction of Shem Elohim. So what is, when you look at the Elohim, you can look at the glasses half full or half empty. You look, oh my gosh, the half full. No, it's half empty. It's half empty. You look, it's half empty. No, it's actually half full because it's creating a revelation. Yes, albeit a smaller one. That's one reason. Another explanation is that both names, Yudke Vavke and Elohim, they're both names of Hashem. And Hashem is higher than both of them. But the will was Hashem was that the revelation should be in these two veins. And as Yud Kei Vav Kei infinite and Elohim finite. Revelation and concealment. So based on the services, you'd like to add an explanation. That this that we say above the contraction, on high, even the symptom, it doesn't conceal the infinite part of Hashem. Besides what we explained before. Why? Because even the symptom of the name Elohim, it's one with Hashem. It's one with Yudke Vavke. And therefore, since it's one with Hashem, there is no concealment there. So based on services, you can say even deeper. When we say Les Dein Asar Hedyet, that the place of the Mikdash is not a place of simple energy, and it's also the place of the Ark, because the revelation of above space that was shining in that space was from the space itself as well. And therefore, you can say that this revelation, that there is no, it's not a place of low-level energy. That's going to be in the third temple as well. And what does that mean? There was like this. The first temple and the second temple were from the four letters of the name Yud Kei Vav Kei. And we know the four letters of Yud Kei Vav Kei are connected to the 10 Sirot. The first temple, is the first base of Mikdash, is the higher level. In Yud Kei Vav Kei, there's two Heys. So it's the first Hey, which is connected to Bina. And through that, you reveal the Yud, the energy of Chachmah. And the second one was the second Hey, which is Malchus. And through there, you have the revelation of the above, which is the six emotions. And the third temple is a whole different level. It's going to be Keter. And like we said before, like we brought in the beginning of this discourse, that the Yavri Ari, the lion's going to come, which means revealing Keter, which is above Estalshlus. Now, when you're dealing with the 10 Sefirot, so the revelation part and the concealment part, which is, again, the revelation is called the light, and the concealment is of the vessel, is two things. It's the light and you have the vessel. Now, this, that the two ideas of revelation and concealment, the light and the vessel, is the names of Hashem. And then you have the Hashem, which is above it. How do you bring that in? You bring it through Keter, which is basically above Ishtalslos. In other words, just like the vision of the Sefirot, Chachman Bina, etc., where is that? By the revealed Sefirot of Atzilus. However, when you're dealing with the ten hidden Sefirot, which are hidden in Keser, over there it's all one. And the same thing also when it comes to the vision of light and vessels, that in the 10 spheres which are hidden, which is basically in Keter, the light and the vessel is all one. So based on the service, beautifully, you can say that the true idea that in this place is not a tar head, it's not a simple place, that even the place itself is going to be a vessel for the revelation of on high from the place that's going to be revealed in the third temple. Because then what's going to happen is what's going to be revealed in a revealed way, that the name Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, Anal-Kim, the way it goes down in the level of Ishtal-Shlos, the way it flows down, and the same thing also in two ideas of higher than space and space, the way it comes down to this world, that they're ultimately both names of Hashem, and the truth is really it's all one. So based on what Shabbat said, you can say, understand what's brought down in many, many places, which we brought down in the beginning of the discourse, that the quality and the superiority of the third Beit HaMikdash is going to be something that's going to last forever. So the question is, one second, we could have had everlasting in the first Beit HaMikdash, true. So why is that the quality of the third Beit HaMikdash? We could have had in the first one also. You can say the explanation is because the everlasting part that could have been in the first temple, that would have been from the revelation of above time. But the revolutionary idea in the everlasting part in the third temple is that even in the limitation of time, it's going to be a vessel for it as well. Time will be a vessel for the infinite, and that's the quality of the third Beis HaMikdash that's going to last forever. Because true infinite, something that lasts forever, it's not because it's coming down from on high, but literally the place itself is a vessel for it, and that everlasting vessel is going to be specifically where in the third Beis HaMikdash, and by creating the revelation of the union of Yud-Kei Vav-Kei and Elohim on that level, which is going to be basically in the third temple, that means even the space that was created from Elohim is going to be a vessel for the revelation of Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, which is higher than the space. So we're going to be able to draw down that concept, not only in the Beit HaMikdash, but in the whole world. And when is that going to happen? When is that revelation going to happen? That's going to happen by the redemption, which is going to be after the building of the Beit HaMikdash. The reason that the ultimate redemption is going to be a redemption that's going to last forever, and there's never going to be exile afterwards, because the world is going to be ready for the redemption. And like the author explains in Likutei Torah, that the third redemption is in the merit of Yaakov. And we know Yaakov is all about truth. And in truth, there is no change. Because the true idea of infinite, which comes from truth, is that the physical world will be a vessel and ready for it. And the same thing also, when it comes to gathering in the exiles, the redemption, the gula, which is going to be on all six corners of space. Like the prophet says, we Mizrach from the Zerach, I'm going to bring from the east, the Mayra from the west, I'm going to gather you, and from the north I'm going to gather you, and from the south, and from far away, and from all over the world, etc. You can say, and use the term rachik, far away, and from the other corner, is referring to obviously higher and lower. It means it covers all different levels, north, south, east, west, and top and bottom. So you can say that basically the gathering of the exile from all different sides is going to be that literally that all the six spaces are going to help make it happen. Now, even though that the revelation that's going to come into the world is only going to be like a taste of the revelation of the base of what's going to happen in the Beis HaMikdash itself, but nevertheless, there is a certain advantage in the when it comes down into the world. Why is that? Because the union of Yud-Kei Vav-Kei and Elohim, which takes place in the Beis HaMikdash, and like we said, it's a place that there's no head yet. Everything is it's at the highest level, so it's not recognized so much that the union of Yud Kei Vav Kei Elokim is coming from Elokim itself. But on the other hand, the revelation that you can have the union that's coming and it's coming from Elokim itself, where is that? That is when that energy of the Beis HaMikdash is going to be revealed in the whole world. So based on what Rebbe explains, now we can understand the superiority of the redemption compared to the temple. And that's why the redemption is going to happen after you build the temple, because to draw in the revelation of the temple in the world, that's going to take place only after the building of Beis HaMikdash in the redemption. Now, this the main revelation of the union of Yud Kei Vav Kei and Elokim, and that the union is coming from Elokim as well. When is that going to happen? That's going to happen when the dead are going to be resurrected, and that's going to happen after the ingathering exiles, at the end of everything. Why is that? Because the revelation that's going to be in the world, which means there's going to be the redemption from exile from all over, it's a finite redemption compared to what's going to be when the future Mashiach comes. Why? It's only like a taste of what's going to be like in the Beit HaMikdash. But on the other hand, when there's going to be the resurrection of the dead, and then there's going to be literally the energy of the body is going to come from Soivei, which is higher than the energy of the soul. Because we know the soul is going to actually receive energy from the body. You can have both qualities. You can have the revelation of the infinite part, and the revelation is going to be in the body itself, which comes from the name Elohim. And that's why it says, Gadol Yiyah Kavod HaBayis HaZeh Acher Min Rishon, that this house is going to be, the last one is going to be greater than the first. In other words, even though there's going to be many, 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 many things in the future redemption, and until you have to come to the resurrection at the end, which is the end. But the fact is, the main thing is the house. Why? Because even though the house comes first, then you can have much greater revelations, but the source of everything comes from the Beis HaMikdash, and from there it's going to be coming into the world. And that's also the reasons that the first the first activity of Mashiach, after we're going to establish he's the right Mashiach, the first thing he's going to do, he's going to build the Beis HaMikdash. Why? Because that's the source of everything that's going to exist afterwards. And it finishes off so powerfully and so beautifully. It should be the will of Hashem that this all should happen very, very soon and very, very quickly. Here you have another powerful, beautiful Chassidic discourse from the Rebbe about the process of the revelation of Yud Kei Vav Kei into the world, the heavy Kabbalah of the Il of Alul and Arimor and the Koyach and the Pula and the creation automatic, etc. But most importantly, that we're going to have the revelation of Yud Kei Vav Kei is going to be in the world through building of the Beis HaMikdash, gathering of the exiles. The world's going to feel it. We're going to have the resurrection of the dead, but it's all going to come from the power that's Mashiach is going to build the Beis HaMikdash. And God willing, let's hope, like the Rebbe says, it should happen very, very quickly. And our next clash will be in Yerushalayim, Yerach Kodesh. Have a great and blessed week. Shavua.